This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
A study by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives shows how Canada lacks a coherent response to end violence against women, and it says that societal costs related to that violence rival those related to the use of illegal drugs. The study recommends the implementation of regular, sensitive, detailed surveys of the incidence of sexual assault and intimate partner violence. And it details the need for a coherent, coordinated, and well-resourced national action plan to address violence against women.
The report is called The Gap in the Gender Gap, Violence Against Women in Canada. It was written by Kate McKinterf. I spoke with Kate earlier in the week and began by asking her why this study was conducted.
Out of interest in how much money the federal government was spending to address violence against women. The government has made several statements in public, and including in the throne speech a few years ago, about this being a priority. And so my question was, what makes it a priority, and how much are we spending, and is it adequate, and is it going to the right place?
The report from the study begins with some stats. I was just looking at them earlier today. The World Health Organization, for example, estimates that one in four women in Canada will experience intimate partner violence or sexual violence in her lifetime. Tell us more about the numbers that you've discovered.
There have been a number of studies over the past two decades which have tried to put a kind of a number on the rates of violence against women globally. And the study that just came out this month from the World Health Organization is the best global study that exists. And what they did was compile essentially all the research that had been done. So looking, for example, at Canada as a part of a group of higher income countries, they looked at over 100 data sets, and from that were able to provide that estimate that approximately one in four women in Canada will experience this kind of violence as adults. So their study, like mine, doesn't address the issue of childhood sexual abuse. It just looks at women 15 or older. It's a big number.
How does Canada compare with some of the other countries in our same pool, you might say, or the same league, so to speak?
The rates tend to be fairly similar. What is different is the level of information available about those rates. So violence against women is notoriously difficult to measure because the stigma of this crime, unlike in most crimes, the stigma with these crimes tends to attach itself to the victim, not the perpetrator. You don't see that with, victims of mugging, for example. No one hesitates to say that they've been mugged for fear that someone will then blame them for having been mugged. Unfortunately, that's not true for victims of sexual assault and intimate partner violence. And so the vast majority of these crimes are never reported, which means that you can't just look at police statistics to get a sense of how much of this kind of violence is occurring. The best data we have suggests that Canada is about on par with most similar high-income countries, but we don't know nearly as much as other countries, Australia, for example, about sort of on a year-to-year basis, are levels going up? Are they going down? If we implement Program X, do we see a result or not? I would say we haven't in Canada been as good about trying to measure what's happening to women and what kind of impact the work that we're doing is having.
Kate, your study focuses on two forms of violence experienced predominantly by women, intimate partner violence and sexual assault. And now the report says that the personal impacts of violence are important to acknowledge, of course, but that there are other impacts, including impacts on the economy. Tell us more about that.
It's clear that the reason to address this problem is because of the terrible personal costs. But I think that, when we talk to legislators and decision makers, they are going to ask questions about cost. That's just the nature of governance and the nature of the world that we live in. And so I think that it's important to understand how much we're spending, how much interventions that we know will work to make women's lives better and safer, how much those would cost, but also to look at what is the cost of doing nothing or what is the cost of the status quo. And there, I think that folks just don't have a sense of how much this costs us. It's really shocking. A recent study by Justice Canada, so by our government, estimated that the cost of intimate partner violence tops $7 billion a year. So that's a huge impact on our economy. And so when it comes to spending money on interventions that could decrease that, there's a good fiscal case to be made as well as a moral case to be made for intervening.
You've compared these costs with, for example, the cost of the use of illegal drugs in Canada, also the cost of smoking in Canada. Where does this fit in with that hierarchy, so to speak?
With the kind of best estimate I have of the combined cost of both of these forms of violence, I think that we're looking at about $334 a person in Canada per year. Is the cost of allowing these forms of violence to continue, and that's about $100 more than similar estimates of the impact of the use of illegal drugs in Canada costs us. So illegal drugs cost around $260 a person a year, and it's a little less than smoking, which is more. It's $540 per person per year. So what those costs represent are sort of the obvious direct costs. So if someone is assaulted or beaten, they may go to an emergency room. So it's healthcare costs. They may have longstanding injuries, so there are further healthcare costs there. They're likely to miss work or miss school, so you miss costs in terms of lost productivity. There are also often, mental health, psychological impacts, which have both direct costs in terms of people seeking help from mental health care providers and indirect costs in terms of the kind of impacts, long-term impacts of trauma on people's ability to perform their daily work. So, again, you have lost productivity costs. And at sort of the ugliest end of the spectrum, you have the cost of for those people who don't get the support they need, some will commit suicide, and so that is sort of the most tragic end of that spectrum of costs.
You make four key recommendations at the conclusion of this the report to this study. One of them is a call for a national action plan to address violence against women. Kate, what would that national action plan look like?
Well, I think what we really need is national coordination, because what became clear is different provinces are taking different approaches. There's some minimal level of they talk to each other, they meet once every few years, but there isn't any kind of real coherent coordination of those efforts. Nobody's saying, oh, this worked really well in Quebec, maybe we could do this in Ontario. And so that's really what we need, is a kind of a national vision that says, this is how much we would like to decrease rates of violence within this number of years. These are the programs that we know are working. This is how we're going to roll those programs out across the country. This is where we have gaps in services. This is where we need to put particular kinds of programs and policies in place. So, for example, in rural communities, there's a whole different set of challenges in terms of the lack of policing and the lack of services. So we need some tailor-made interventions for particular communities. But overall, the kind of scattershot approach that we have right now is really not working. I mean, it's evidently not working. We're not seeing rates of violence go down particularly. And so I think the first step in the direction of actually seeing an end to violence against women is having that national level leadership and having that coordination.
You call, in one section of the report, you call this the cost of ignorance. And it seems to me that the key point that is coming across from your research is that we need to know more about this problem.
Yes. I mean, I would hope that there are two key points. And one is just the level of violence and how many of the women that we know and the women in our lives are being affected by this directly. And that is driving force behind this work. But the follow-up on that is that we just haven't done a very good job of tracking, you know, what's happening with these kinds of crimes. And if you don't measure whether the crimes are going up or down on an annual basis, then there's no way to know if the interventions you're making are working, right? I mean, you can't say this was a success or not if you can't actually also say, well, we know it was a success because look, that, you know, it was 1 in 10 women in this year, 3 years later, it was 1 in 5 women. So, you know, we need better measures to see if what we're doing is working, and we need to do more things that are working. And the way to do that is to figure out, you know, what we know already.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think just again to reiterate that, you know, this is a problem that touches everyone. If you think about that 1 in 4 number, that means that we all know someone who's been impacted by one of these forms of violence or both. As a caring society, and as a society with, you know, more than adequate governance institutions and healthcare institutions and policy institutions, we are more than capable of addressing this problem of ending violence against women, and we just need to make a more concerted and frankly better resourced effort to do that.
Kate McKinterf, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
Kate McKinterf is a research associate at the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. She recently joined the centre to lead an initiative on gender equality and public policy called Making Women Count. You can find out more online at policyalternatives.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.